This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome into hour number five of the G-Bag Nation, where life gets rough sometimes, as you might have just found out. I'd like to shout out the 817 on the Autoflex Leasing Fantex. We got a great NBA bubble and Luka KP Mavericks segment here for you. But the 817 asked a great question to kick off hour number five of the G-Bag Nation. Jeff Cavanaugh, Brian brought us Lucius Alexander with you. He says, can we get a D-note dinosaur news of the evening segment on G-Bag Nation? And I'll have to put it up to a vote. I vote yes, and I'll let you know how that vote turns out, you know? I'll let you know. And 817 also says, could be a different 817, stick to sports. Nah, just kidding, Jeff. Love the dinosaur segments. And the 214 said, enough about dinosaurs. Let's talk about Dak sucking. So that's kind of what we're working with today. That's kind of at football, Lucius. So, NBA news for you, or NBA opinion stuff for you. What we have here is the NBA Restart Confidence Index. You got that? Big questions for the top 10 teams. The Mavericks are one of the 10 teams they're going to hit here, which that's nice, one of the top 10 teams. What they did was they polled a panel of NBA experts for their confidence level in one key unknown about each of the top 10 teams in their latest power rankings. For instance, can the Houston Rockets' micro-ball approach work? Will the LA Lakers find an effective closing lineup? Do the Raptors have enough to take down the league-leading Bucks again? Things like that. Voters then marked their confidence and how effectively each team will answer that question from 0% to 100%. How confident are they in each of those things? So the first one, the LA Clippers, on-court chemistry, dealt with injuries and roster moves throughout the year. They were finding a rhythm there before the shutdown in March. Doc Rivers back in April said, what I know for real was the last 10 games, we were turning into the Clippers. You could literally feel it. We started understanding each other. We were playing seamlessly through Kawhi and Paul. It wasn't forced anymore. Now they'll have to figure out how to pick up where they left off. The five-man lineup that closed against the Lakers on March 8th, featuring Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, and Marcus Morris, has logged only 12 minutes together. But the panel was high on this team reaching its ceiling. More than 80% of voters expressed at least 70% confidence in LA figuring it out. I think that's too good of a collection of talent. And I think Paul George and Kawhi Leonard as your two superstars is a couple of guys that are not only supremely talented on both ends of the floor, but I think they work really well in a team concept. So I think I'm a pretty big Clippers believer. I could see them being the NBA champions this year. I could see Kawhi going back-to-back and being champs again. L.A. Clippers, the experts are believers. I'm a believer, broad issue believer in the Clippers.
Yeah, but I think that's an interesting angle they've taken there about, you know, Doc was talking about, yeah, this team was playing really well. And you know, those are the types of things as a front office, a coach, you're like, hey, let's just, you know, let's keep playing. Let's keep going. And then all of a sudden,
Corona's not that bad.
Yeah, no. Hey, no. Come on, guys. Don't go anywhere. We can keep playing. No,
we got to hurry up and get this in before it really hits.
It's bad. It's bad, Doc. We got to go away. Coronavirus. That's why you're Doc.
Good job, Doc.
Good job, Doc. But I do think that they're, you know, you would want to believe that that team would come back hungry, that they know that, hey, maybe we do have something special here. But as a front office, as a coaching staff, they have to I'm sure they're going to have some of these early practices, and they're going to think, man, we're going to have to really ratchet down here. We're going to have to kind of get on them a little bit. We're going to have to get this thing going again, because they might have lost some of that.
Isn't Kawhi one of the most – his personality, to me, is one of the most interesting in the league, because he strikes me as a guy who needs no motivation whatsoever. Like,
no,
he strikes
he
me
doesn't.
As basketball cyborg.
No, he doesn't.
But at the same time, I don't know that he's the guy that's going to be like, come on, come with me.
No,
he's kind of like, I got it. I'm
no,
going full speed. It's cool.
You look at what he did, you know, with the whole thing and – you know, well, all his years, I think, in San Antonio and in Pop, you know, and dealing with that roster and dealing with that staff and all that, that kind of – that's perfect for that type of guy, because it's all about basketball. Then he goes to Toronto, and everybody knows it's a one-year deal. It's a total rental thing. And he goes up there, and I find out Nick Nurse is a pretty good coach.
Wins the whole thing?
Yeah, he's a pretty good coach. I mean, he hits some key shots. But now he goes to the Clippers. He gets with another one of those old school kind of coaches. You know, that's the kind of atmosphere that he thrives in. That whole thing with Toronto, it was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'm living in Canada. Okay, uh-huh. You know, I don't care. You know, but he just shows up and plays. And I think you're absolutely right, though. He's not the guy that's going to get in everybody's face. But you know, by looking at him. You know that, like, man, if I don't show up tonight,
yeah,
he knows.
Poor man gets paid.
Yeah.
He'll beat you up.
He will beat you up, yeah.
Okay, so now here's their interesting note on the Lakers. So they're going to be the one seed in the West, whatever that means when there's no home court advantage.
Yeah.
But they never, during the season, settled on a go-to lineup during their clutch minutes. They played 101 clutch minutes, and they never had a go-to lineup for it. So it's LeBron and Anthony Davis, but then it would just be any combination of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Danny Green, Alex Caruso, Kyle Kuzma, Rajon Rondo, Avery Bradley. All those guys would be in and out with LeBron and Anthony Davis. Now, Avery Bradley won't be joining the team.
Right.
And so it's to pick from those other three, and the question was, will they figure out a closing five-man lineup? And the voters voted mostly positive, average score of 76%. And I think it was because they were just looking at the question saying, wait, are you asking me, can the Lakers close out a game with LeBron and Anthony Davis? Yeah. Whoever's out there, I think they'll figure it out.
And I think Danny Green, too, is a good option. There's another guy that's battle-tested. People are talking about this Caldwell Pope as being, reading into it a little bit, as being kind of an X-factor player. You know, that people were going to – they're going to figure out about him and his game, and that, you know, if in fact Davis and James are going to have to lean on somebody, that he's very well the guy that they can count on here.
I mean, Caruso's a good player,
I do love Caruso, because he's so all over the place, and he's, like, flopping around. He's driving. He gets knocked into the, you know, into the row three, and – he pops up. He's tenacious on defense. He kind of like gets in, you know, he gets down in that stance, and he's trying to guard you and stuff.
Well, he's a 26-year-old balding white guy.
Texas A&M, you know. but see, that's the thing about, and Kuzma's another guy. Kuzma's another guy that feels like this is an opportunity for him to step up on a big stage and get that notoriety. So I think that they've got the guys. I personally feel like as long as you've got Davis and James, you don't need me to tell you that, but that's how this is probably going to work out.
They say the biggest question for the Milwaukee Bucks going into the bubble is the supporting cast. Obviously, Giannis is incredible. They're a plus 16.1 net rating when Giannis is on the floor, but they're a plus 4.1 even when he's sitting.
Mm-hmm.
So they got crushed when Giannis would sit down against the Raptors in last year's playoffs. Complimentary stars Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton have yet to prove real postseason consistency, especially as secondary creators on offense. But the panel likes the group. I tell you what, I like the group because I don't like the East. I like the Bucks' ability to get to the finals, because I just don't like – like, I'm not sold on Boston, Toronto without Kawhi Leonard. No, I'm just not sold on anything in the East. So I'm getting ready for Milwaukee to go back to the finals and play one of the L.A. teams or, of course, the Dallas Mavericks.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. If you had some teams you could really trust in the East, you mentioned Boston.
Yeah.
Philadelphia is another one.
Yeah.
Philadelphia, you know, they are strange with the way – I mean, that is such a talented roster, but they're so Jekyll and Hyde, to use that kind of a phrase. Play really well some nights. Other nights they look very disinterested. You know, I just don't see – I'm with you on the Bucks. I just don't see them tripping up. As long as they've got Giannis, I you know, the points, the rebound, and the, all that stuff. He's just such a complete player. He
freak show.
Yeah, he's not going to let them. He's not going to let Milwaukee fail here. I don't think he is.
Biggest question about the Houston Rockets: their micro ball approach, playing tiny, tiny basketball, not small ball, micro ball. No traditional center in their rotation after Clint Capella, after they moved him in February. Coach Mike D'Antoni before the shutdown said a lot of this strategy is having a firm belief in it, players believing in it, and then imposing our will. Then our strengths become what wins. But if they impose their will, if they out-rebound us and knock us around and we don't root them off and all that, root them off. What is a root them off?
Yeah, move them. Yeah, put your shoulder in and kind of root them off the spot. Yeah.
Kind of root them off.
Root them off.
If we don't guard at all, yeah, then it's crazy and we won't win.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few votes for total failure or resounding – oh, there were few votes for total failure or resounding success here among our panel, but the majority predicted the Rockets' small ball approach will mostly work. And that's going right back to what you're saying about some of those teams in the East, because their micro ball approach has been all over the place.
Yeah.
And before the shutdown, where it's like, hey, what's up, Lakers? Pow, take that. And
yeah,
it's like, oh, hey, garbage teams, you beat us. What in the world's happening?
I'll never forget that night that you and I were – we did that boat show. We were at the boat show. We went and had some dinner together afterwards, and we're sitting there watching that first night of micro ball.
I wouldn't call that dinner.
Well, it was –
nothing you eat there is really dinner.
No, that's – we had a good time. We had food brought in, remember?
That was
when food brought in.
Okay.
But we're watching micro ball.
Okay, now I remember.
We're watching micro ball and we're like going, man, this is actually working. You know, and you're thinking like, well, we got to talk about this now.
Yeah.
They had some rough patches. But I feel like, though, with in the eight games, we'll see. We'll see, okay, are they the team that's going to come out, line up around the perimeter and just gun shots and make them? And that's their game. It's so funny to watch them play with nobody in the paint.
Watching James Harden guard centers.
Yeah, but that kind of looks like Westbrook. That looks like how he kind of wants to play. You know, you get him. But I'll tell you one thing: you spread everybody out, he will take that ball to the rack.
Oh yeah,
he is not afraid. I mean, people say, "Oh, he'll gonna sit out there and gun shots all day." No. You give him some space, He will explode and he'll finish. So
and the next guy find that can stay in front of Russell Westbrook with all that room will be the first one.
Watch that. That's going to be a big, big factor in the way they play.
For Denver in the bubble, the biggest question is about the slimmed down version of Jokic.
How about that?
And man, he's kind of shredded up.
He's
looking good.
Looks really good.
He's lost a reported 40 pounds during the hiatus. Teammate Jamal Murray said, "Hey, Joker got a little 4-pack. I love it. It's kind of weird to see him like this, where he's a lot more athletic, but he is moving a lot better." I never know about that, because in some ways the heft is an advantage for him on offense, but he's also really skilled.
Nimble.
So I think it'll work out just fine for him, and I hope it works out great, because I'm still hoping that Denver can track down the Clippers and take that 2 spot and play the Mavericks.
Where this might help him, Jeff, is if we start to get these games where you're having to play a lot of them. I'm not saying all back-to-back, but, you know, there's not many off days in this schedule if you really look at it. And
I think he is a pack-a-day guy.
Yeah,
very well
could be. That might be keeping the weight off a little bit now. But, yeah, you always worry about a big man that shows that nimble smallness to him, but is able to kind of move around that way. Does it affect the way he plays? I have a feeling this is going to help him even more. I think he's going to be harder to deal with at this size.
quickly for the Boston Celtics, they say Kemba Walker's postseason impact. He had a sore knee before the All-Star break, and he struggled when he came back. So seeing what he is like, they're fairly confident, according to their panel of experts. The Miami Heat, the question is their defensive potential with great defenders like Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, yet they didn't get stops like real title contenders for most of the season.
Sure.
Can they find another gear in the playoffs? That average score was just under 60%. But here's what really matters. The Doncic-Porzingis pairing. Both will be making their playoff debuts. The pair logged a plus 6.7 net rating when sharing the court during the season, which ranked 37th among the 146 NBA duos to play at least 1,000 minutes together. There were few votes for Doncic and Porzingis turning into a postseason disaster, as most of the panel expressed slight optimism that they'd find a way to be effective. And that's negligence, guys. That's fine that they were 37th in the league as a duo over the course of the entire season, but isolate that bad boy down to after the Luka injury when KP found his stride started playing together, and let's see what that looks like now.
This is
top five.
Yeah, this is not knowing the teams you're covering, you know, and if you're going to throw something loose out there. And, you have to really dig in. And if you're going to use that as a reason, they really didn't play together a whole heck of a lot. And then all of a sudden, they did get to play together. If that's what you want to evaluate, I'm fine. But they made it sound like that, this is a big, big, big question mark.
It's going to be glorious.
It is. I think so, too.
Let's get up in that bubble. Let's see it. Luka, KP, Mavs. Let's get after it. Coming up next, it's the Cowboys news of the evening. Zeke and his response to the running back rankings. And everybody believes in the Cowboys again, which means we're doomed. It's next. Welcome back, G-Bag Nation. It's time for the Cowboys news of the evening, the C-note. For now, we are considering replacing that with the D-note, the dinosaur news of the evening. Just depends how much dinosaur news I get from day to day. This segment brought to you by Get Mortgage Ready, My Computer Career, and our buddies at Frankel & Frankel. Love me some good Frankel & Frankel. Have you been injured in an accident with a work truck or an 18-wheeler? Call 214-333-3333 or frankelfirm.com, Principal Office, Dallas, Texas. But before we do that, how about this tweet from Shams Charnia of The Athletic? Houston stars James Harden and Russell Westbrook did not travel with Rockets today to Orlando and will join the team in the near future, sources tell The Athletic NBA. Which is ripe for lots of speculation. I'm going to choose to go with they are enjoying one last hoorah, socially distanced at an establishment. That's what I'm going with. But yeah, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, not with the team traveling. That's quite strange. And I'll be keeping my eye out to see if there's any other news about that, because that's different.
Yeah, now, that is different.
It's very different.
You're making me now, I'm going to text somebody that I know that might know this.
Yeah. Well, do it.
I'm going.
Feel free.
Just run this segment. You're doing a great job.
He's going in. All right. Cowboys news of the evening. We touched on this at 2 o'clock, which is a long time ago. But ESPN is doing a thing where they're ranking the top 10 at each position group, which I'll be honest, right now as we're waiting for the team sports to get back, whichever ones actually do, it's a great time for lists. And so yesterday was quarterbacks, and today was the top 10 running backs going into 2020. Ezekiel Elliott ranked third, and they did say that 1, 2, and 3 was a really tight grouping with Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, and Ezekiel Elliott. And that was the order, 1, 2, 3, Saquon, CMC, and Ezekiel Elliott. The headline is that Ezekiel Elliott retweeted a quote that was put out from the part about him where they said a NFL offensive coach said, "Very few breakout runs, doesn't look as strong anymore. Feels like he's about 60 to 70% of what he was." And he retweeted that and accused whoever said that of being faded, which is funny because of his twitch. And I'll ask you, Brian, because I tried to piece this together in my brain on the fly during the 2 o'clock hour. Forgetting about contract, because I don't dislike running backs. I love a good running back. We watch them all the time. Running backs are great. I dislike paying running backs in a salary cap league because of I think I can replace the vast majority of what one would do. But just ranking the players, how would you stack Zeke up? Top five? Top seven? Top three? Where do you think he is right now?
Overall, or yeah, as just as
in the league?
In the league? I would say, I wouldn't say he's in the top five. I wouldn't say that at all. You know,
can I make you put the names on it? I'll give you the top 10, Saquon Barkley or Zeke. Who would you rather have?
Barkley.
Christian McCaffrey.
McCaffrey.
Alvin Kamara.
I think I would take Kamara because I could do more with him.
Derrick Henry.
Henry's more physical. Now we're kind of getting to the same player, I think. I'm going to go with Henry.
Dalvin Cook.
Cook's got a, he's got a burst, yeah.
Nick Chubb.
Chubb, yep.
Joe Mixon.
Wow. Yeah, I see where you're going here. I mean, in my mind, I don't have him as a top five guy right now, and you're naming all these guys. And I'm trying to think about, okay, where does he fit? Maybe with ahead of Mixon and stuff like that. Chubb, I think Chubb is underrated myself.
He is.
I think the guy at Minnesota is underrated there.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
You know, I think Henry might be too high. Maybe we should draw the line at Henry right around there. What is that, six?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably about right, because I don't want to take away and pretend that he's not still a good running back when we bring up, because we do. We've brought up his shortcomings a lot, and his shortcomings you can measure in the fact that you have 300 carries and only four of them go for more than 20 yards. That's not a good rate. It's one of the worst in the league. So,
yeah.
You know, he's stacking up carries, he's stacking up touches, and he stacks up yards. So a lot of people will say, well, he was, what was he, second in the league in rushing? So he's great. I just want to see, is this a product of college and NFL, the workload is catching up, and so that burst can't come back? Or is this a product of, I'm not really prepared for a season with a holdout in Cabo? Like, what I'm trying to figure out is there hope of that guy returning? Like, do you think at the end of this year, if Zeke busts his butt to get ready to play football, that at the end of the year we could say, oh, look at that, he had 12 runs of 20 yards or more, and he was one of the better in the league at that? Or do you think we're on the path of what his career looks like?
We're on the path. We're on the path with him. I as much as I want to believe that you'll see more 20-yard runs, you know, more 50, 60-yard finishes and stuff, we just haven't. And I think 1,200 touches is catching up to him. And I, you know, he starts slow. It's like he wasn't, you know, it's like he, you know, the whole thing, he went to Cabo, he held out. You're thinking, okay, if he holds out, he's going to be in the best shape. He's going to hit the ground running and all. You know,
I didn't think that.
I'm just saying that that's what he thinks. That's what, you know. But
you can't simulate getting ready for football.
No, and it's funny because under the Jason Garrett administration, he just practiced. He wasn't hit. They didn't use him in the preseason, and they were scared to death of putting him out there and having him, you know, get injured. You know, he was that important to him. But I honestly believe the older you get and the more hits you take, the harder it is to keep that level. That's why these backs, I mean, we've seen this with these backs. It's take them, use them up, and then move on their way. And if you're a back that gets bigger, you get slower. You know, that was there were several times these bigger backs. I mean, we could very well see it with Henry. Henry yeah. could be a guy, yeah. a big guy, then all of a sudden he gets slower as you, and that's the thing you worry about the most when you pay these guys, is that, okay, the skills are going to go away. How fast do the skills go away? And I think with Zeke, he's trying to hold off as long as he can, but I do think the wear and tear will be problematic for him.
I think there's something to be said for what he still definitely brings in terms of his ability on third and short inside the 5-yard line. I think it was Matt Bowen on ESPN. He did something where he was talking about some of the best players, teams, schemes, and different scenarios, and one of them was Ezekiel Elliott on the goal line inside the 5-yard line, where it's like he's still – there's no doubt he's still got that lower body power and that ability to finish and get you a tough yard. He's got that. It's just the juice, the ability in the open field, and you need that in the passing game too. If you catch a ball in space, let's make a guy miss, and that part of his game. So I'm with you. I think he's probably a top 10 running back. And I know, feel free, 877-881-1053, Autoflex Leasing fan text. Tear me up. I don't mind.
No.
I know it's an unpopular opinion, but I'm curious what more Pollard looks like. He was getting you 5.3 a carry. He was making people miss. Now, he's not doing it at the same volume that Zeke is. And I don't want him in some of those scenarios where I need a yard or I need a touchdown. I want Zeke in there for that. But I'm curious what the other back on your roster brings if he gets some more carries. That's where I am. When there's 5.3 to 4.5 is the difference, let me see this other guy a little bit more. And, you know, I try not to be disrespectful of the player when I talk about the things that he struggled with. But those are things that Tony Pollard is – he grades out great in his ability to get big plays when the ball is in his hands and his ability – to make people miss and avoid tackles. So I think you've got a really fun combination of guys that can complement each other well. Let the compliment guy get some more run.
This is the problem you run into is if you're a Tolo out there or a Cowboy fan, whatever, that's complaining about, well, you don't like Zeke, you're being mean to Zeke. I don't know how you can watch the games and not
see.
Oh, no.
Oh, tear them up. Tell them you watch more.
No. I'm just saying with your own eyes. That's what I'm saying. You don't need a former crusty scout to tell you that. You really don't. If you're watching these games, you don't see the explosive runs. When you put Tony Pollard in there, you do see explosiveness. You do see that hit the hole, you know, make a guy miss, and now it's an extra 4 or 5 yards. With Zeke, I mean, he's hammering the ball at people. And then, you know, it's like he gets what he can, and then, bam, he's down on the ground. And I don't think that's Zeke's fault. I think that Zeke, for a long time at Ohio State, with the Dallas Cowboys, they've handed him the ball. They said, listen, you're the guy. We're going to keep handing you the ball. And there comes a point in time where when they hand you the ball, you're not able to execute like you did 4, 5, 6 years ago running that ball. So I don't know how you could – you have to watch with your own eyes, and you could see that. I know you could see that. There's a lot of smart football fans out there.
817 hadn't heard us use that term before. He said he didn't have to add crusty in front of former scout. That's what we go with now.
That's
for anybody who's been in the league a while, we'd refer to them as the crusties.
The crusties.
817, I think McCarthy is going to help Zeke because of the predictability of Garrett's offense. 4-6-9, I agree with you, Jeff, but I also think our offensive line decline in situations where we ran Zeke when the box was crowded doesn't help.
Exactly. That's a fair point, too.
9-4-0, wow, Jeff is still hating on Zeke. Convinced now that he is jealous of the Zeke and prospect Call of Duty relationship.
Oh, there we go.
817, he's top three still. Give me 3 to 5 backs that are better. I would say, in my opinion, definitely McCaffrey, definitely Saquon, definitely Nick Chubb. I think you can start debating because you're going to throw his total
Kamara.
Numbers at me, but I would take Kamara. I would take Henry. I would take Cook. I think I would take Mixon.
I would draw the line. I think I draw the line at Henry. I do. But I don't think the list is very good to begin with because I told you this and you agreed that there are a couple of guys that are too low on. They got Chubb too low.
Yeah.
They got the Minnesota guy too low. You know, they might have a couple too high. You know, and that's just the way people's lists are different that way. But
9-4-0, Zeke did lose a step, but he's not Mike Allstott. That's fair.
That's very fair.
6-8-2, he doesn't run to daylight. It drives me insane. He doesn't try to make people miss. He's looking for contact. I do feel like I see that with Zeke sometimes. Okay, Cowboys news of the evening. One more thing I want to get in here. At Roto World, Hayden Winks, he's one of the analytic nerdy guys. He's trying to rank the NFL offenses by analytics usage. So he's saying the analytics are telling you there's certain things in football you should do. Which offenses are doing it the most? Whoa. I must have something turned up here on my computer. Sorry about that. Okay. So the metrics, like in Nerd World, they would say on fourth down, be aggressive. Go for it more often.
Only if the head coach gets criticized does that happen, or it used to happen.
Right. We could talk him into it.
Mm-hmm.
Pass rate on early downs. How often do you throw it on the early downs? Because the numbers say that that's a good idea. Your passing rate while trailing. When you're behind, you should throw it even more. How often do you run play action? How often do you throw it downfield? How often do you use the middle of the field? How often do you pre-snap motion? What's your offensive pace? All these different things that the numbers say do these things. Number one in the league is the Baltimore Ravens at following the analytics. They're first in fourth down aggressiveness. They're first in shotgun run rate. They're first in play action rate. They're first in a lot of different middle of the field passing, pre-snap motion. They dominate the analytics. Number two is the Kansas City Chiefs, which, man, doesn't this sound like guys you think might be good at this stuff?
They move the ball. Yeah.
Three is the Patriots. Doesn't it sound like guys who might know what they're doing? Four is the Rams. Five is the Saints. It's a list of the teams that you're like, oh, no, they're the teams that get it and they implement this stuff. They have the Cowboys eighth. They're pretty much middle of the pack at everything. They're not lagging way behind in anything. And in offensive pace, they're second. But other than that, fourth down aggressiveness, 10th. Downfield passing, 10th. Middle of the field passing, 12th. So that's good enough to be
surprising.
Eighth in the league. Do you think that these numbers will go up considerably with a new head coach? Like, what? How much of an effect can what I consider to be conservative head coach have on a first-year play caller?
I think
Kellen Moore and Mike McCarthy tend to be more aggressive.
Yes, because what's going to happen is Mike McCarthy, in his year out, saw every one of those games, Jeff, you're talking about. Kansas City, the Saints, Baltimore. He saw how people attacked other teams. Trust me, the fact that he's playing against the AFC North and he saw what Baltimore was doing to those opponents twice a time. You know, he is going to steal ideas. You know, he is going to take stuff from Kansas City and Andy Reid. Absolutely. I have a feeling that Kellen Moore is going to have things that he wants to do, but Mike McCarthy has a binder full of things. It's like he's going to put on Kellen's desk and say, listen, I would like for you to try and do this, and I've got the cut-ups to prove it, and you need to take a look at those cut-ups.
I think all the best coaches, you should be thieves, offense and defense.
Andy,
be proud of it.
When I was in Green Bay, Andy Reid and John Gruden were the biggest thieves I've ever saw. There was a guy named Bob Snelker who had a really good screen package with Darren Nelson throwing the ball to him at Minnesota. They stole the complete package. The 49ers had a great screen package with Roger Craig, but now here they use Minnesota screen package as well. And so they pushed the offense that way. All the great play callers steal. Every single one of them.
Got to. It's the whole idea. All right,
it's
the Cowboys News of the Evening, the C-Note, every night at 6:20, unless we change it to the D-Note, the Dinosaur News.
Got tomorrow,
they're
working on it.
Well, I might find some dinosaur news tonight.
I'll brush you up on that.
877-881-1053. Which one would you rather have at 6:20 tomorrow? You let us know. Coming up next, we'll mix it up with, I believe it is Chris Arnold and Will Chambers.
You got it right
filling
tonight.
In for the nosebleed seats. We'll see what they got coming up for you next here in the nation. Thank you, Lucius. Personal note before we mix it up with the nosebleed seats. I would like to ask any good Tolo who is interested. We have a campaign that started today that is called EarDFW. That's E-A-R, EarDFW.com. It's an actionable anti-racism campaign in DFW that we came up with, and we are trying to drive people to this and raise money for four awesome nonprofits that are local, that are the boots on the ground, that are trying to make a big-time difference in the community. And so if you are interested in joining us and helping us out, you can go to EARDFW.com. The benefiting charities and organizations are Big Thought, which is a nonprofit that closes the opportunity gap by equipping all the youth in marginalized communities with skills and tools they need to imagine and create their best lives and a better world. Big Thought is awesome. The Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce, which is the oldest black chamber in the U.S., they're an advocate for the creation, growth, and general welfare of African-American businesses in the Dallas community. The Revive Dallas Small Business Fund, which is helping people who have lost business due to COVID, primarily minority and women-owned businesses. And the Texas Organizing Project, which is the largest grassroots progressive organization in Texas. They're engaged year-round community organizing, helping grow the electorate. So it's four organizations that we found that we thought would be great organizations to help raise money and awareness for. And so if you could help us out, Tolos, I sure would appreciate it. You can find it on my Twitter feed at JC1053. Let's talk to the nosebleed seats. And tonight it is Chris Arnold and Will Chambers. How are you guys doing?
What's up, Hef?
He's in the building!
Terrifically well thought out. Incredibly. Honestly. On the ear DFW thing, man. Props. That's some great stuff.
You guys did a great job organically putting that thing together. And it's grown and grown and grown. And I mean, all of you guys. Kelsey, she's the driving force, right?
Chuck's great at her.
Kelsey's the heartbeat of it. It grew from her, yeah.
So props to everybody, all of y'all. And the charities and the organizations, the social justice organizations you mentioned, they're all worthy. So it's definitely worthwhile, and I love the whole concept.
I've got two questions, one for Jeff, one for Mr. Broadus over here. First off, I had no idea. I always thought it was a velociraptor. We had the thing, though, that came out that got Newman.
So I think the velociraptors, I haven't seen the movie in so long, but the velociraptors were like the pack hunters that were going through the indoors somewhere.
Okay. And they look like the mini T-Rex, except they've got longer arms and just more badass.
I think so. Now, I think Lucius has a better recollection of Jurassic Park because he kept calling him by his character name and seemed to know the scenarios here. So, Lucius, are you familiar? Velociraptor versus the
yeah,
dino?
Yeah, like the velociraptors, that one is about, what, 2.5 feet, maybe 3 feet? Little small thing, makes that noise.
Yeah. It'll rip your face off, too. Yeah.
Got that big toe?
Yeah.
That long big toe needs to be... clip.
But I didn't know, like, I honestly thought forever that the one that killed, I called him Newman, his character in Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought, but my question was, because you said at one point in that this dude's talking about, they had an algorithm to figure out. So we got algorithms in like social media, like Facebook's got an algorithm. They have an algorithm to put a dinosaur together.
I guess. You find two or three of the fossil bones and you plug it into an algorithm and they're like, all right, here's the finished product.
What is carbon dating? Is that wrong too?
That's using carbon to date things.
Okay. Right.
I knew I was going to get that answer.
Cut an old tree in half.
Two days in a row with deductive reasoning by Jeff Kavanaugh. Wow.
Carbon, I can knock that stuff out, baby.
Carbon
Let's go.
Dating, I think, is something you could do. Yeah.
Okay. My question to Mr. Broadus here, and I've been thinking about this because we, you know, over the course of the last, you know, several days or week about preseason football. And we know if you could do it in college football, you should be able to do it in the NFL.
Right.
Now, it's more complicated and we can go down that list. But here was one thing I was thinking about in regards to the Cowboys, because how difficult, and maybe it's not at all, but the routine of having a new coaching staff in there, if you don't have preseason, and I'm just talking schedule-wise, Saturday, Sunday, knowing when you got to be, where you got to be, all that kind of stuff, and could it possibly be a distraction, just you're doing it for the first time and it's regular season games, you don't have that, you know, working through that in the preseason?
Yeah, I don't know about the distraction part of it. I think that, to me, I feel like that the players... if it was Garrett here, they would say, okay, this they know. They know this is the book. It just changed the date on the book, and you know, this is how we're going to do things. And I think with players, though, they get excited when things are different. You know, and I think that players look at that as a challenge, but they also know that they're not going to get Yeti cups with win on it and fight and all that and have to listen to speeches and stuff. I think the players...
No shirts this year?
No shirts. You know, I mean, yeah, it's nice to get a free shirt and stuff like that every once in a while. But I do feel like, though, there's that newness to it. And as a player, even Jordan Lewis talked about a fresh start.
Right.
You know, and you
Clean slate.
Players understand routine. I mean, they'll figure Mike McCarthy and the staff out. They'll figure out how practice is going to be run. They'll figure out how they go from drills to drill and how they line up.
Yeah, because that acclimation is what I'm really worried about. I'm just curious about because it's so new.
It's a veteran staff. I mean, Carolina's a team that's got a whole new staff. There's these teams that have these new staffs, and yeah, that's going to be a problem, like with the Cowboys. You know, but I think the fact that the Cowboys are a veteran staff, and then the players, I players love newness. They love something different, and coaches hate change, but players love change. Players love when you can make things a little bit different,
disrupt the monotony.
Yeah, mix it up. Yeah, mix it up.
Kind of like my learning experience last night hosting the nosebleed seats.
With no shirt? How'd you like that?
Oh, I took a shirt off, didn't you?
Yeah. Those pictures.
I didn't know what was going on. All of a sudden, I'm talking and I'm trying to convey a point, and I look over and Kevin is taking off his shirt. And I thought he was getting warm, and had like an undershirt in there.
Kevin knows the deal.
He knows the deal.
And then I remember that I have seen the tweets of... everybody just hanging out with no tops.
Hat on.
So, hey.
Hat on, no shirt. Yeah.
That's how it goes, man. Gotta be proud of that body.
Jumped right in there.
Yeah, whatever you got.
Kevin Gray was the Kansas City Woolly Bully.
There you go. Yes, sir. That was a lot of fun last night.
What's coming up on the show tonight, gentlemen?
We're going to get into some college football. Your headlines are coming up right away at 7, but, college football today has taken a pretty hard left turn, and we're going to get into how big the next week and a half is going to be, not just for college football, but when we get to this point in a week and a half, all of sports are going to be greatly affected on whether we move forward or whether things get shut down. So we're going to get into that at 7:20.
Are you out?
I don't want to talk about it.
I know.
I'm scared too.
I thought we were about to be there. I know. We were so close, and then, hey.
They didn't check with Rona. Rona got the final say-so on. She got the final say-so.
We're almost there, guys. Everything's supposed to start this month. Come on.
Pro sports is going to power through. Get ready.
The thing, it's always nice when in the final hour, you've got something that you're looking forward to the most in the show. At 9:20, so you've heard this stuff that's gone viral, like describe something in the most boring way possible.
Yes.
I'm not going to do it correctly, I feel like. They seem to me like I'm writing down just headlines that are vague of the biggest sports moments, good and bad, in my life, and I'm laughing to myself. So I think that's going to be some fun. We'll do that at 9:20.
Nice. Looking forward to it, boys. All right. And as a parting note, I would like to let everybody know that if you would like to help fight racism and make the world a better place, you can go to eardfw.com, eardfw.com. If you make a donation tonight and screenshot it and send it to me on Twitter at JC1053, I'll play golf with you next week. I'll make Will Chambers. I was just going to say, I'm in for that.
Let's go get it, boys.
Yeah, hey. These are for great people that are making a difference in DFW every day, and they need our support. So if anybody can do that, I'll golf with you, baby. Let's get it. For Brian Broaddus, for Lucius Alexander, and for the Nosebleed Seats, the Will Chambers, Chris Arnold edition coming up next. I'm Jeff Cavanaugh, and the G-Bag Nation's out of here.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.